This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
At Vocalo, we've always known what Chicago sounds like. Now we want to hear from you. Every Friday night on WBEZ, the Vocalo Hotline features song requests and dedications from listeners, plus artist interviews, turning Chicago into a living mixtape. Listen in every Friday night at 8 on 91.5 WBEZ Chicago and Vocalo.org.
Hey Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Make sure you stick around for a breakdown of the day's top stories in the Chicago area at the end of this episode. But first, biking for many Chicagoans isn't just a way to get around town sometimes. It's a daily part of life. But as more fatalities take place on the roads, and after the recent death of cyclist and bike advocate Riley O'Neill, many riders are asking a difficult question. How safe are Chicago's streets? O'Neill died in a crash last week after being struck by a car door and thrown into traffic. Days later, hundreds gathered in the Bridgeport neighborhood to honor his life and his work to make city streets safer. Now advocates are renewing calls for more protected bike lanes and stronger safety measures across the city. In this episode of The Pod, we'll talk with a panel of local organizers and cyclists about O'Neill's legacy and what it'll take to make commuting throughout Chicago safe for everyone. At the table was Sharna Albert, organizer with Chicago Bike Grid Now, Kyle Lucas, who's executive director of Better Streets Chicago, and Jim Merrill, advocacy director of Active Transportation Alliance. We started with reflections from each guest on Riley O'Neill's life and what they knew of his work within the cycling community. Kyle went first.
We had just recently met him as he was moving into a new role at CDOT. We were looking forward to working with him closely on things like bus priority and accessibility and pedestrian safety.
Yeah. Jim?
Yeah, I first met Riley when he was a graduate student almost 10 years ago and was working at the Chaddock Institute at DePaul. So someone who has been a part of, you know, the sustainable transportation community, and it was clear it was a passion of his, and had, you know, for all these years been, playing a really big role in that. So,
right. And Sharna?
I didn't know him personally, but we had a lot of acquaintances and friends in common. And he was on the Complete Streets team at CDOT. So I knew several of his coworkers.
Right. You know, his death has garnered a lot of media coverage this week, though he's unfortunately one of more than a dozen pedestrians and cyclists killed this year so far. People have said, though, that Riley O'Neill's death is particularly painful and was a preventable tragedy. How so, Jim?
So, you know, Riley was doing everything that a safe cyclist should be doing when he was moving down the roadway. What happened was a door was opened into the path of the bike lane. He tried to avoid that, was clipped by it, and then was hit by a large truck that was coming in the same direction. And so that was, you know, clearly a result of what we call a door-in crash, and someone not really paying attention to their surroundings when they're exiting their vehicle. Mm-hmm. Importantly, though, when we say it's preventable, it's also a reflection of how the roadway is designed, with the driver's door opening into the bikeway. And we have plenty of alternative ways to design our bike facilities to really eliminate that threat and make it okay for drivers to make that mistake without having it be fatal.
Sharna, Bike Grid Now organized a bike ride in his honor. How did that go?
It was amazing to see the entire biking community come together like that. This is an event that we organized in 48 hours, and hundreds of people came to pay their respects to this man who was such an important part of our community.
Yeah. Kyle, he was cycling on a stretch of Halsted Street that has a bike lane in between the traffic lane and parked cars. You know, Jim sort of broke it down for us there. But I mean, are bike lanes enough when you think about what happened here?
So in this instance, there, you know, the a driver had multiple infractions from parking in the bike lane illegally to, you know, opening a door into traffic without looking, which is also the fault of the driver. They had an expired license. They had expired insurance. So there were a lot of things that were wrong with what the driver had done. However, despite all of that, if there had been a protected bike lane on that stretch of Halstead, this incident wouldn't have happened. Mm. Because even if a door had opened into Riley while he was cycling past, he would have fallen to the sidewalk, not into the path of a large truck that was moving through traffic.
And for folks who may not be following, tell us what you mean when you say protected bike lane.
Sure. So instead of having the bike lane between the parked cars and the moving vehicles in traffic, you swap the location of the parked cars and position the bike lane next to the sidewalk instead. So it provides a protected travel lane, still mm-hmm. provides parking for people who need it, but provides so much more safety. And then also makes the street safer and calmer for everyone. It slows drivers down who tend to speed in other arrangements yeah. and also provides additional barriers for pedestrians.
Yeah, Jim and Sharna, you're both nodding. What are the alternatives to bike lanes, Jim?
In addition to into the bike lanes, I mean, you can also be providing safer places to ride on side streets mm-hmm. and to kind of channel some of that traffic away. You know, it's difficult when you have a busy commercial corridor. That's where the destinations are and where people want to go. And so I think, you know, in this case, a protected bike lane is really kind of the key solution. But also, I think it's important not to forget the role that the large truck played in this crash
yeah.
and some of the policies and tools that we could be using as a city to really manage where and when those large vehicles are operating. And it's something that, you know, if you go to anywhere else around the world, seeing a 65-foot truck, going down a roadway during peak travel hours mm-hmm. and rush hour, that would be a shocking thing to see. But here it's pretty normal.
Yeah.
And so looking at how do we manage the operation of those large trucks? How do we incentivize the use of smaller vehicles? Look at different hours of operation. Those types of things are all kind of also an important part of the equation.
Sure. Sharna, Kyle used the word calm a moment ago, and it sort of makes me want to pivot to a goal of your group, right, which is to have, 10% of Chicago streets prioritized for pedestrians and cyclists by creating what you call traffic calming infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Explain examples of that for us.
Yeah, so we are big fans of not actually having cycling routes on the same large arterial streets like Halstead that we see now. I think it's important, it's necessary. As Jim mentioned, that's where the destinations are, you need to get there. Mm-hmm. But for people who live in the neighborhood, in the Bridgeport neighborhood, like Riley, who might just be going to and from home, if we had an alternative route on the neighborhood streets of Bridgeport with things like raised crosswalks, speed bumps, things that naturally have to slow drivers and cyclists both down, we think that would help a lot.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, what street safety infrastructure do we currently have in Chicago that works? What's working?
Sure. So, And we do know what's working because we have examples of where a lot of these crashes have been dramatically reduced since we've introduced them. A great example of where we've had a lot of time to study the impacts now is on Milwaukee Avenue in particular, which is actually pretty similar to the street size of Halstead mm-hmm. And kind of like what the shared modes are of like different types of traffic that are on that street. And so they've installed the type of protected infrastructure that we're advocating for, and crashes have dramatically decreased on that, both for pedestrians and cyclists, but as well as between drivers, because it forces drivers to actually pay attention to the road instead of just speeding down, you know, wide arterial lanes.
Right.
They're actually paying attention to their surroundings. And advocates have been advocating for this type of infrastructure on Halstead for a long time. You know, I remember in 2021, there was a protest after the city had scrubbed out some bike lanes just a few blocks north of where this incident occurred.
Mm-hmm.
In 2023, a lot of us folks were advocating for protected bike lanes on Halsted after one of our community members nearly lost their life biking on Halsted on the north side. In 2024, Better Street Chicago strongly pushed back against designs at the Chicago and Halsted intersection. Mm-hmm. And won, thankfully, some improvements that are currently being constructed with the viaduct there. So our community has been pushing for this for years. And, you know, community members in Bridgeport have been asking for this type of infrastructure as well.
You know, when you think about the chatter, and I want to hear from all three of you on this, the conversation around this can often seem like this is a cyclist versus driver situation, right? It's one of the challenges, certainly, that I face when trying to, you know, bring these conversations to the radio, right? And bring you folks to the table. Do you necessarily think that that is the case? And talk to me about how you, in your own circles, address the disconnect. You want to go first, Jim?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess I can kind of out myself as a driver. And so I own a car and I need to use it to get around for certain types of trips. I try to avoid using it when I can. But as, you know, as Kyle said, the largest group of people impacted by crashes are people in cars or riding in cars. And that includes with fatalities and serious injuries. And the common thread between those car crashes, the serious injuries and fatalities in cars and outside of cars is speed and the size of vehicles. Mm-hmm. And so slowing down how fast drivers are able to go and creating those narrower travel lanes, which encourage people to naturally slow down. And it's really well proven. We have a lot of great examples in Chicago. Is really going to make the street safer and better for everyone. And it's also, you know, at the end of the day, it's not going to really impact your trip time because we do a lot of hurry up and wait between lights. People are speeding mid-block for no good reason. They're going to catch the next light. You're going to average about 12 miles an hour in your car no matter how fast you drive mid-block. And so these designs really just kind of spread out that speed in a much more, much safer and more sustainable way. And at the end of the day, you know, we're all people using the roadways and trying to get where we're going,
right?
Regardless of what mode that we're using. And I think everyone deserves to be able to do that safely.
Yeah, and I think that's the consensus, or at least for me. I mean, even when you started by saying you want to out yourself as a driver, like it's not shameful that you drive. I mean, I'm also speaking as a driver. But Sharna, tell me how you approach these conversations.
Yeah, I think that better infrastructure for cycling would make drivers have a better experience as well. I agree with Jim fully. I think we're all, at the end of the day, just trying to get from A to B. And most of the people in the cycling community have cars as well. I don't, although, well, my husband does. But I think that having this type of infrastructure would improve the commuting experience for drivers and cyclists alike.
Kyle, how are you on the cyclist versus driver conversation?
Every time I drive a car in the city of Chicago and I end up on a road that has a protected bike lane, I'm so thankful because I no longer have to worry about whether or not I am going to be the one that hits the cyclist, because it creates clarity on the road. It makes it easier to park because I don't have to worry about driving through a bike lane. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just really simplifies and creates a lot more order on the streets. So it really is better for everyone. And drivers do really benefit from this type of infrastructure.
Now, we did extend an invitation to Alderman Nicole Lee of the 11th Ward, but did not hear back in time for the conversation. We also invited the Chicago Department of Transportation. There wasn't anyone available to join. However, they did share a statement that I want to read in part. CDOT remains committed to growing our network of protected bike lanes and neighborhood greenways that provide people biking with safer, more comfortable routes. That work is ongoing in communities across Chicago, including Bridgeport. The department is coordinating with Alderwoman Lee's office on the early stages of a community planning process focused on developing a network of low-stress bike routes in the area and advancing other traffic safety improvements. CDOT is taking a comprehensive look at the area, analyzing potential improvements to increase safety for all road users, including detached curb bump outs, traffic circles, speed humps, and other improvements. What do you make of that statement, Jim?
I think, it's good to hear that CDOT and the Alder are working together on a process. My concern is that you know, safety continues to kind of be up for debate and negotiable in terms of is the floor kind of the safest possible infrastructure, what we know is going to protect the most vulnerable people on the roadway?
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes we see, you know, safer designs, things that calm traffic more, get kind of watered down as part of these processes to accommodate, you know, different concerns around parking or economic impact, all of which are valid and have a role in the conversation. They're not more important than people's lives.
Yeah. So. How many fatalities will it take for us to keep moving that needle and get us to where we need to be when it comes to safety?
Exactly.
Right. Do you think our city leaders are taking this issue seriously, Kyle? I mean, Mayor Brandon Johnson has maintained that he's committed to creating more bike lanes here.
Yeah, I really appreciate, you know, the statement that came from Alderwoman Lee. You know, she has taken some strides to install protected infrastructure in her ward after some other incidents that had occurred after she came into power. And, you know, the city does have, you know, has made a commitment to installing protected infrastructure, although we have seen some decline in funding recently that we would like to see brought back up to more sustainable levels. But it has become a bit of a wedge issue, and I've been really disappointed in rhetoric from some other elected officials in Chicago who have utilized protected infrastructure seemingly as a wedge issue to mm-hmm. divide us. There are even statements that were made post, you know, after this incident that you know, took Riley's life, where some alders were using it to make political statements about ShotSpotter and saying that alders who cared about protected bike lanes didn't care about the lives of others. And I think it's really shameful that we would, you know, devalue anyone's life over, you know, political issues. And really, we should be concerned about protecting every single Chicagoan, yeah. and we need every tool in the toolbox. And you know, this is public safety. This mm-hmm. is, you know, keeping people safe while they're getting from point A to point B is critical as well.
And we talk about the city and their responsibility. That's one thing. The infrastructure, of course, is another. Are there efforts among your groups from you know, the cycling community to better inform the newer cyclists out there? Because I'm sure you would agree that there are a lot of cyclists on the roads right now that aren't adhering to the rules of the road. Shauna, what comes to mind? I'm thinking of like delivery drivers on bikes, right?
Mm-hmm.
This kind of goes both ways.
Yeah, I think that we, so we have posted some footage from our ride on Monday night online, and we've been getting a lot of hate from the internet trolls saying, you know, cyclists need to obey the rules. If you want, I remember one that we got was, if you want to live, you better stop at the stop signs or something like that, which, you know, kind of feels like a threat. So, yeah, I think one thing that our group does is we train marshals to help with rides, and that helps generally to keep people safe on our group rides.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when it comes to obeying the rules of the road, I think everyone can agree that if a cyclist doesn't completely follow the rules of the road, at least no one's life is at stake generally. I mean, a cyclist can't kill someone the way that a car can.
Sure.
Yeah.
Kyle?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the onus of responsibility on cyclists is obviously a lot more individual. And I think that this type of infrastructure can also have an influence on behavior. You know, I think that the more that we have protected infrastructure, the better people will behave, because there's less of a feeling of risk, like you're having to duke it out with drivers on the road. And, you know, I think both drivers and cyclists equally have the ability to be a jerk. I think, you know, we know Chicago drivers are pretty notorious.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think to the point of, you know, delivery vehicles, that sort of thing, there's also been, you know, work with, Active Trans worked on a bill about addressing e-motos and, you know, different devices that are actually, you know, a little bit closer to a motorcycle rather than a regular e-bike.
Right.
And there's some things at play there that I think with some additional regulation will help address some of those concerns too.
So leave us with this, Jim, the role that everyone here, everyone listening, everyone at this table plays when it comes to street safety. What do you want our listeners especially to take away from the conversation we just had?
You know, your trip is not any more important or urgent than anyone else on the roadway. Be aware of your surroundings, and particularly if you're behind the wheel of a car, you have a greater responsibility because of the greater force that you're generating, and this is the way physics work. So we all have to respect each other and err on the side of caution and do our best to keep each other safe.
Yeah, we've been talking with Jim Merrill with Active Transportation Alliance, Kyle Lucas with Better Streets Chicago, and Sharna Albert with Chicago Bike Grid Now. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Turn now to the top Chicago area news stories of the day with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and senior education reporter Sarah Karp. The humidity continues to rise, so here's Claire with a weather update to start.
Humidity is going to linger a bit, although we sort of had a nice little bit of relief from the storms. But in the mid-80s, today in the mid-80s, again tomorrow, if you can hold out, might be in the 70s through the weekend, but that's going to take some enduring.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about folks who had to endure those storms yesterday. It was severe, lots of wind, trees were down all across the city. Did it affect your commute at all?
Yeah, I had to turn around twice.
Wow.
This morning, getting even to Lakeshore Drive, there was a fallen tree, a full-size tree in the middle of Montrose just past Clarendon. And we've been seeing this across our neighborhoods, even Skokie, Swift, CTA Yellow Lines this morning. There was a large tree limb on the tracks. Service was suspended for 2 hours while CTA officials had to clear that up.
Yeah, lots of trees down on the south side of the city. Just, you know, if you keep going on Lakeshore, down Jeffrey, just trees down everywhere. The power was out in various spots, traffic lights flashing. How about you, Sarah? What was your commute looking like?
Well, yesterday I was coming back from Washington, D.C., and I kind of got caught in storms both in Chicago and in D.C.
Oh, boy.
So my plane was delayed by about 2 hours, which was not terribly pleasant, but I was glad to be safe, I guess. I was glad I was not in the air.
Oh, sure.
That, so.
Absolutely. Now, Claire, do we know how many people are still without power? Because that's an ongoing issue.
Well, we know that the Markham Courthouse is closed today due to a power outage. So we're seeing this residentially and in some of our municipalities, but thousands of Illinoisans have outages today. ComEd reporting more than 5,000 active outages, nearly 200,000 folks affected across the northern portion of the state. So crews are working to restore service, but we know that because this is going to take some time, ComEd is saying that they might not have everything back up and running until at least Saturday. So with the AC out, it might be a tough couple of days for some folks.
And, of course, we're hearing about the possibility of more storms today.
Yeah, National Weather Service predicting more severe weather tonight, level 3 out of 5. So that is, you know, it's not nothing. Wind gusts could be quite strong, upwards of 50 miles per hour. Also, potential for heavy downpours and flash flooding. Biggest window right now is around 7 o'clock for this big system, when we might get an even, you know, smaller system before that in the afternoon.
I imagine authorities are suggesting, you know, stay inside.
Yeah.
Find shelter.
Certainly if you're driving or you're flying, to Sarah's point. But if you see a big puddle, high standing water, do not attempt to go through it. The Chicago Department of Buildings actually issued an advisory for property owners and managers, even residents, just encouraging them to sort of take a look at their buildings, especially some of those older buildings, looking for potential hazards, maybe loose signs, unsecured furniture. We saw pool chairs going wild in the
goodness.
West Loop yesterday. So just try to secure some of those objects and hunker down if you can.
Yeah. Sarah, as you mentioned, you were in Washington, D.C., and so was the head of Chicago Public Schools, Macaline King. So tell me, what was she there for? What was she testifying about?
So the U.S. House Committee called her to testify about, it's kind of hard to say because the name of the hearing was pretty broad. It was like breaking trust among parents. But the actual topic was mostly about the school district's sex ed policy and also its policy around protecting trans students.
Let's hear a little bit about that. We'll first start with the opening remarks from Republican Congressman Tim Walberg of Michigan, Democratic Congressman Bobby Scott of Virginia, and CPS Schools CEO Macklin King, of course.
When classrooms become vehicles for political or ideological agendas, rather than places of learning, what students need to learn to compete in this world, Congress has a responsibility to ask questions.
Schools across the country are grappling with gun violence, ICE raids, learning loss, the rise of artificial intelligence, and the affordability crisis. That's why I'm disappointed that the majority has once again decided to ignore the concerns of parents and instead to focus on divisive culture wars with the hope of scoring cheap political points.
In CPS, we say every student, every school, every community. Fulfilling that commitment requires us to recognize the diversity of experiences, needs, and strengths that exist across our district.
Sarah, tell us a little bit more about what was happening there and the tone of these hearings.
So, you know, you played a part of Tim Walberg, who's a staunch conservative, the head of the committee, and he's from Michigan. And you played a part of his tape that sounded very reasonable, but there were other moments that he really went after, not just Chicago Public Schools, but also the school districts of the other superintendents that were in attendance, which was the San Francisco School District superintendent and the one from Loudoun County, Virginia. And he went as far to say that the policies that Chicago Public Schools has could be considered abuse and neglect. He said that they were radical, and so he really, you know, he really laid it on pretty thick that he and other Republicans really feel like the policies that we have are beyond the pale.
Yeah, you know, we've seen university presidents summoned to Capitol Hill, but this is the first time that we're hearing, you know, K-12 school districts being grilled, and it's as the Trump administration is investigating CPS. Right.
And this is the thing. So on one hand, this was just political theater. I mean, you know, I think both sides would kind of agree that this, you know, this is more for the cameras than necessarily for, you know, any real progress. But on the other hand, this committee, you know, the chairman of the committee does have some power over funding, and actually even, you know, even threatened in a way that he was going to, you know, talk to the education secretary about whether school districts that teach this type of thing should be getting federal funding or some new federal funding. So, you know, there are consequences to what we're talking about here. It's not there's not no stakes. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, it was an important moment for the school district superintendents to kind of lay out what is going on in their districts.
Now, Claire, some developments in the investigation of a burning cross that was discovered in Grant Park on Sunday afternoon. What else do we know?
So we know a few things. That Chicago police have released a picture of a person that they suspect lit that cross on fire in Grant Park. So this is of a sort of a shirtless male, appears to be on the younger side with dark hair, you know, leaving what they think was the scene of this situation. And now faith leaders are offering a reward for anyone to come forward with information that leads to an arrest. Officials continue to express outrage. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson releasing a statement yesterday, as did Chicago Cardinal Blaise Supich. But the faith community of St. Sabina is offering a $10,000 reward at this point if any information leads to an arrest. So this is an arson investigation, and it is well underway.
In other news, Claire, the NBA Finals continues last night. The New York Knicks won game 4.
29-point deficit
that
they overcame, even up to the last second of the game with Brunson, you know, sort of bricking that three and then the slam dunk over all of the Spurs, the tallest guy in the league. The Knicks jumped over it, exactly. And Jerry Seinfeld's face, he goes, "I can't believe it." And that was, I think, the sentiment at the Garden for sure.
Well, of course, the player with the game-winning shot, you know, you see his press conference after the game. They say, you know, "How do you feel? You got the winning basket." He said, "Oh, it was cool."
Right. It's like, yeah.
No big deal. This is what I do.
Just a casual Wednesday night's work.
Wu-Tang Clan performed for the halftime show, which was a fabulous throwback for the hip hop fans out there. I wonder if they were the Good Luck Charms.
Yeah, and I don't think that if President Trump had been there, he would have been sleeping through Wu-Tang. But you never know.
That's true. That's another good point.
But Game 5, I believe, is going to be Saturday night and back in San Antonio. So right. We'll be talking about this on your show on Monday.
Yes. It is hot and humid, as we've talked about, Claire. It also means that mosquitoes and possibly mosquito-borne diseases are out and about. Some of the insects in McHenry County have been testing positive for West Nile.
Yeah, it's skeeter season, and especially with the rain, you know, that's not helping matters. But Fox River Grove, there was a batch of mosquitoes that did test positive for West Nile. McHenry County Public Health confirming this is the first positive West Nile test so far this season. They're going to continue surveillance by collecting and testing more batches through mid-October. That's when the season extends till about the 15th of that month.
Mm, what does that mean for us?
So no human cases have been reported so far this year. Officials do recommend, you know, that if you're going to be in wet climates or sort of boggy areas or deep in the woods, wear protective clothing, light-colored long-sleeve shirts, high socks, pants, and if you can, use those EPA-registered insect repellents. The off.
Yes. Get that out.
The deep woods.
Yes, yes. After a contentious delay, Sarah, the Chicago School Board voted to renew contracts with 6 charter school networks. Why was the vote delayed?
Well, there's been a lot of controversy over charter schools over the last 2 years, really. You know, there's been a handful that have closed because of financial reasons, leaving kids, you know, just stranded. This year, for the first time ever, Chicago Public Schools had a charter school close mid-year due to financial problems, which is, you know, just totally unheard of. So I think that what happened here is that the school board members really wanted to make sure they did due diligence before approving contract renewals for these charters. The one that closed mid-year had just been renewed last year, and there were a lot of questions as to why was Chicago Public Schools renewing the contract for a charter school that was in such financial trouble.
CPS school-level budgets were due this week. What should we know about that?
Well, what we should know is that we're waiting to see them. So sometime in the next couple of days, I expect that Chicago Public Schools will put out a list of school-by-school budgets for the media to look at and the public to look at. And the real question here is how many teachers were laid off, how many special education aides were laid off, how many assistant principals were laid off. There's a lot of questions as to how these budgets are going to play out and who's losing jobs. And already some of the information that we got was that as many as 700 teachers could be laid off in this budget cycle. Chicago Wow. Public Schools is facing a $732 million budget deficit. So they're going to have to make some trims, and we're just waiting to see exactly where that's going to be on the school level.
WBEZ's Claire Lane and Sarah Carp.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yason, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.